Hey Rem, how are you?
Good, how are you? It's been a while.
It's been a long time. How long has it been? 6 months? 8 months?
Oh man, I don't know. I don't think it's been 8 months, but
Okay.
it's probably been about 5 or 6, I'm guessing. I don't know. I'd have to go back on the archive and see.
No doubt, me too. Well, it's like what? It's about 6 o'clock there? It's
Yep.
earlier? It's earlier.
Yeah, 2 hours.
Okay. So you were probably just trying to throw together a little food, right? Or something like that?
Not quite yet.
You haven't even eaten yet.
My partner is having a ladies' night, so I'm not really allowed in the house right now. I mean, I could probably be in there and like get some food or something, but I'm at my studio right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I almost hear like a plane in the background. Like a humming sound.
Well, there isn't. I am outside for the moment. There is an airplane,
Okay, wow, that's
but
amazing.
it's not very loud.
No, but I can hear it. That's really interesting.
Well, maybe it's the Bose headphones.
Well, I got
That's what
these
I'm.
little cheapies on now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the Bose in right now.
Okay, man, maybe that's what it is. That's really interesting. Well, I was blown away by this little bit of information that you put together from the might of not the might of thoughts, but the way to live. So, do you want to kind of start out there, or
Sure.
now you guys are still meeting in Colorado, right? Like once a month or something?
Every month we have a meeting. For the last maybe about 4 or 5 months, it's been every third Saturday of the month, but it's pretty much generally the second Saturday of the month.
Okay.
And it's just basic group discussion on topics from The Way to Live at the moment. We've been kind of studying this book for maybe the last year or two. Probably 2 years. I mean, I don't know. There's so much in it. We kind of like read through a few of the verses, and the conversation just spirals out through, like, sometimes even just one verse.
Do you just go step by step incrementally through the book? Is that what you
Yeah.
mean? Okay.
Yeah, we kind of started at the beginning, and then now we're up to I think page 344.
Okay.
But
Now, are you also going through what they call the what do they call it, the Geissus layer?
no, 'cause that's not that's for the individual person to study on their own,
Okay.
and not everybody in our group is has subscribed to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you have to be like a passive member of FIGU to do that, right?
You know, I don't know if you have to be a passive member to subscribe to the Geissus layer.
Okay.
But it you might it I might be wrong. I mean, it would make sense that you would need to be a passive member, but I'm not sure.
Okay. I was just kind of wondering about that.
Yeah, 'cause you're not a passive member, are you?
No, I'm and I've been thinking about that more and whether or not I should take the plunge or not.
Well, and you know, it's not really necessary. It's up to you and whether you feel like you want to do that or not, you know, of course.
Do you feel obligated? I mean, you're supposed to go to Switzerland once a year, right?
You don't have to. But you know, it's encouraged because you get to then meet people and experience what it's like to be at the center. And yeah, I mean, if you go during the passive member meeting, which is every May, like at the end of the month, then you get to meet people from all over the world who are involved in FIGU and study the material and try to live in line with the writing and, you know, all that stuff, which is really just the laws of nature and living with reality and trying to be like a true human being and trying to be like connected and grounded to reality. That's like b the basis of the whole thing, you know?
Well, that's very interesting the way you put that. being connected to reality, because I think the more I study this kind of thing, that seems to be very true.
Yeah, it's like this, what Billy writes and what we're studying, what you talk about on your show, and what only a few thousand people around the world study is what Billy writes, called the teaching of truth, the teaching of spirit, the teaching of life. And the teaching is the teaching of truth. And what is truth? It's just, it's basically just what can be recognized in reality. You know, it's like I think I've read it somewhere it's like truth is certainty in recognition of reality. And it is just reality, and that's what we're dealt with. And so this is just kind of, Billy's writings are just kind of clothing it in words, more or less.
That's so interesting, because that's the one thing I notice, is that the more I study this material, the more I do feel anchored and stable to reality. It's hard to put into words, but I do get that total sense.
It is hard to put into words, and I find that it's good to, I try to mix it up as much as I can with, like, the way that I phrase things with, you know, because then it opens up new areas in your mind of, like, how you're perceiving reality and how you're perceiving truth, instead of just getting stuck in the same, like, you know, over and over again. Because I mean, the truth can also become a belief if you're not careful. You know, because if you're just kind of like going with the same thing over and over again in your head and not thinking about it from different angles, then it becomes anybody brings their own level of belief into anything, right? I mean, I'm sure I do. You probably do.
Sure.
And I think I was thinking about this earlier today. Like, where's my train of thought here? It's like
we were talking about truth and being grounded.
Yeah, yeah. When I first found out about this case, about Billy's case and the extraterrestrials and and all of that, you know, I've definitely brought my own level of belief into it, even though I wasn't involved in religion ever that seriously. I definitely went to church when I was a kid, and our whole society is steeped in belief-oriented thinking.
Yes.
And you know, I found out about the case and about Billy's contacts, and it didn't take too long for me to be able to see that it was there was something to it. But you know, like when I hear about Semyazi and like Quetzal and Ptah and all these people that Billy meets with, I guess he doesn't really meet with Semyazi anymore.
Right.
Nonetheless, you know, I had like this, I had just imaginations of, like, you know, almost maybe like borderline delusions or hallucinations, who knows, you know, because it's like, how do you synthesize this and assimilate it to the reality that we are living in every day? It's a pretty big leap, you know? So, but the more I have studied the case, the more I've read the contact notes and what Billy has written, that are not contact notes, like the spiritual teaching and the different books, the more I try to see it as it really is. And it seems to me like if you were to meet one of these extraterrestrials, it would just be like, I mean, you've read the contact notes a pretty decent amount, right, Mark?
Oh yeah.
So, like, have you've seen them, like Ptah, or Billy asks Ptah something like, what's your take on this as a neuroscientist and as a brain researcher and as a psychologist? I see all these I see these extraterrestrial people as just really normal people who just benefit from a long lifespan. And it would be like if you were to go, you can't really do this, but if you were to meet somebody who is a fireman, you know, like the, you know, like a respectable fireman, you know, who is really just trying to do good and save lives. But the fireman is also a PhD physicist.
Yeah.
And then the, but not only that, but he's also had the time to, gain a doctorate in botany or something, you know? Yeah. And he's also a policeman. I kind of see the Pleiaren as like sort of like galactic policemen, you know, like the good type of police, not the corrupt police. But like, you know, it's like all these different professions that they have, like ultra sub nano tech. I forget who, you know, they're talking about some of those guys that have some of these, some of those extraterrestrial guys, you know, that have like not degrees, but they're experts in like subatomic particle physics and nanoparticle physics and nano computers and like ultra nano computers. And they're just normal people, but they have longer lifespans and more knowledge.
Yeah. If you had a 1,000-year lifespan, imagine what you would learn.
And I guess they don't have to sleep as much as we do either. So then it's almost like,
my goodness,
it's almost like even longer than that, you know, because I mean, if we live 80 years or so, but we only had to sleep, how long do they have to sleep? Like 2 hours a night or something, or something. Then like, your lifespan is like all of a sudden, it's not a normal 80-year-old lifespan. It's like you're getting 2/3 of the day instead of half the day or 3/4 of the day to be able to utilize. And plus, they don't twiddle their time away by like doing frivolous things. They're pretty much working all the time.
There is a section in the Might of Thoughts that says the feelings transmit themselves to the psyche. And it's said in the context of if you're...
I got kind of off topic there with the talk of the extraterrestrials, I guess.
No, it was fine. But you were talking, it made me think when you were describing these extraterrestrials about the term, how much our thoughts impact us, and still in so many ways that we're not even aware of. But there was a very interesting passage, and this is what happens to me when I study this stuff. Like, sometimes I'll read something and like, man, I have to memorize that. I have to know it word for word, and I'm going to repeat it all the time. And then there's something else that happens where I'll read something and the words don't quite fit together in a way that I can memorize or that I even want to. But a concept will keep coming up and percolating to the top over and over and over again. And I'll keep going back and thinking about this and meditating on this. And what it was saying was, you know how the feelings come out of the thoughts, right?
Yep.
But it was also saying that when the feelings, when the thoughts remain negative, the feelings will become increasingly more negative, transmit themselves into the psyche, and at that point the psyche can become disturbed and sick. So I'm not sure exactly why my mind is focused on that step-by-step thing. But these are the kinds of information, the way the information and the material kind of works with me sometimes. I don't know if it affects you that way or what.
It does. That lately I've been trying to really control my thoughts. And one of the things that has helped me to do that, you know, in controlling my feelings, and trying to program my subconscious, one of the things that I've been doing is listening, or even just trying to get a beautiful song stuck into my head, even if I can't listen to it, because music has a huge effect on your psyche, and it's like a really gigantic mite that, you know, if you have like heavy metal stuck in your head or something.
Okay. Yeah.
And it can, even though you might feel like you're fine, you might also start noticing that you are doing destructive behavior. And I've noticed that about myself, at least. I don't know if other people do, but I think that everybody has a psyche, and different types of music affect us in different type of ways.
Well, I even caught myself a few days ago laying in bed, and I have a cold, and this is when the cold first started, and I caught myself thinking, it was like this super subtle negative thought/feeling, and it was really interesting because I would cough. Right away, I would cough, and I was like laying there, and then I was like real aware of my feelings. I said, "So okay, I'm gonna relax. I'm gonna feel good. I'm just gonna relax and just feel really good." And the cough stopped. So and it just literally stopped, and I went to sleep. But I remembered that. So there are these real subtle negativities that I sometimes think we're not kind of aware of, and they can be more impactful than we would know. So like you said, the heavy metal music could have some, you know, thing that's somewhat subtle that some people wouldn't realize.
Yeah, like it was Kurt Cobain's 50, it would have been his 52nd birthday on what was it, like January 20th. And I painted a mural of him back in 2 years ago in 2017. It would have been his 50th birthday. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine and I painted a mural in Denver of him for what would have been his 50th birthday as kind of a tribute to him. And, you know, I was listening to a lot of Nirvana at the time, just getting pumped up to do this painting. And I remember around that time I had a lot of destructive behavior.
Oh, did you really?
And yeah.
Wow.
And then
anger, or what were you experiencing?
Maybe some anger.
Wow.
You know, I was like drinking like a decent amount of alcohol, and just, I don't know. So
wow. Now,
and
is this recently, or
that was 2 years ago?
Okay.
Like
okay.
And then just recently, like in January of this year, when it was his birthday again, I posted that painting online of the mural as like, you know, from, as I was like, oh, this is right around the time we did that mural. I'm going to repost it. And then I tried to listen to some Nirvana just cause like out of tradition or something, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then I couldn't really listen to it for too long. I could feel my psyche becoming into turmoil.
Could you?
And so I was like, oh man, I gotta put on some Brahms or Bach or some piano or something to counter this.
You know what I've been doing lately? If you take some of those heavy metal songs and you just take the chords and the melody,
yeah,
and take all of the heavy metal sounds out of them, there's sometimes really beautiful music in there.
Yeah, sometimes they are like actually like those guys do know what they're doing musically.
Yeah, I mean, there are two Metallica songs that I've learned on my classical guitar. One of them is "Nothing Else Matters," and what's the other one? It's called I'm losing it right now. "Nothing Else Matters" and "The Unforgiven." Hmm. And there's these they're beautiful, but you have to like reinterpret them, because you're right. They, on the surface, you have the heavy metal guitar sound, and then you have the, the sometimes the yelling and the screaming of the vocals. But sometimes if you can, you know, just settle it down to the chord changes and the melody, it can be very beautiful.
I mean, anything that's, if it affects your feelings as being angry, I think it's probably not good.
Right.
At least not good for too long of a time.
Right.
And then there's other music that is angry, I mean, for the right reasons sometimes. You know what I mean? Like Tool. You ever listen to Tool?
You'll have to send me some links.
Okay. I was big into them for a little while, and I'll revisit their stuff every so often, but like, you know, like some of their, a lot of their lyrics and music has got some, you know, pretty deep insights. And
have you ever heard of Black Sabbath? I think the song is called War Pigs.
Yeah, I've heard it, but I don't remember it. It's been a long time.
Talk about lyrics. Here, I'll just read a few of them. Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerers of death's construction. In the fields the bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. It's there's some poetry there. Of course, it's super heavy metal, you know, it's like, it's, you know, it's crazy. But I mean, and it's interesting because for some reason I have this fascination with World War II. And I feel like we're moving into an age much like World War II, just the time before World War II. Where that's the sense I'm getting with the tremendous political upheaval right now. Have you had any of those kinds of feelings?
Maybe a little bit, but okay. I don't really know too much about the I'm fascinated by World War II as well. Every once in a while I'll watch a documentary on Hitler, or like some TV series, like a Man in the High Castle, was kind of interesting, even though I think it's fiction. But I'm fascinated by it, but I don't know too much about like the events leading up to World War II enough to be able to compare it to like what we're going through right now.
Uh huh. Well, let me. I've got to find it in my notes. It'll just take me a second here. But I, for whatever reason, have been drawn back to Adolf Hitler again, because it was very interesting because the play Arin, well, let me just read a little bit of this, and then maybe we can discuss it. But I really want to focus on the stuff you sent me. It really made a tremendous impact on me. But let me read it. Okay.
Sure.
This is about Hitler. And let me continue here. It says, this was very strictly controlled and monitored, but ultimately all efforts here in vain. And he was unable to fulfill his task in the way that it was provided. Through the leaders of the Thule Society at that time, as well as through the clairvoyant Hanussen One, the Giza intelligences succeeded in taking possession of Adolf Hitler's being and in misusing him for their dark and malicious purposes without him being able to defend himself against them. For delusion-related lust for power began to flare up in him. Now, before I continue on this, let me go back to the top here a little bit. This will help make more sense. This is in Contact Report 260. Adolf Hitler was, in many respects, a genius. His knowledge ranged from a variety of areas of art and technology, concerning a variety of sciences, up to the use of the power of suggestion. In his internal form, he was an incarnate life form of very good values. Nevertheless, he wasn't a man of highly developed spirit, but rather a man of intellect and reason, who was destined to lead the overall earthly politics and economy, as well as all nations, in a certain positive direction. in order to create a peaceful, united world and earth humanity. For this purpose, he was educated and incarnated at his place. He was destined to give a new style to the earth through a positive and enforced nonviolence and to initiate new forms of development. So this is what was supposed to happen. That's what the Playaron wanted to happen. They impulsed this guy to be a world leader, and he was supposed to help bring peace to the earth. Let me read it right here quickly, and then we'll continue.
Yeah.
At this time, Semyase wasn't allowed to say more, she explained, but maybe it is different today, such that I might learn something more from you. You once said before that Adolf Hitler also had, or just would have had, the task of creating a united Earth world. Now, we don't think of Hitler like that, do we?
No way. I mean, a lot of people believe that Hitler was like the devil incarnate.
Absolutely.
Like, he was always evil, even from birth. And we know that that's not true.
Right.
And you know, it's interesting. You said the word destined twice in there. It was, you read it off, and it was, I think a lot of people think of destiny as like, you know, that's something that you're destined to do from when you're young. That's the track that you're going to take with no, you can't do anything about it, you know,
mm-hmm.
like you really got to screw it up to, you know, or, I mean, but what does that mean? I think, at least according to the teaching, you're always creating your own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me think that he was creating his own destiny and wanting to gain power so that he could maybe turn the world into a better place. And maybe that's what he did. Why he chose to enter politics and become a powerful person, but then we also know from the information that Billy has given us, that he's written down, that he was influenced by the Thule Society.
Right.
And what was that guy's name?
Arthur Hermann Steinschneider, who was called at the time Eric Jan Hannesson. It was some alias for whatever reason.
Huh.
Yeah, so, very interesting.
Yeah, so, maybe, you know, since he was very suggestible to other people, maybe he was also very suggestible by other people. I mean, does that make sense? Is that possible? I wonder if that's...
I think part of this, what happened here, the Thule Society... was influenced by the Giza Intelligences, and you've heard of them, right? I mean, you know all
about
them.
Yeah, of course.
And the Giza Intelligences influenced the Thule Society. The Thule Society influenced Hermann Steinschneider. The Thule Society wanted world domination. They wanted to take over the world. And eventually, this Hermann Steinschneider influenced Hitler enough where his thoughts slowly started to change this way. Now listen to this. You'll find this interesting. It's talking about Adolf and Steinschneider. It says, thus both were Austrians. What is to be said further in relation to your question is that Adolf Hitler had already been instructed by our forces through telepathic impulses in his earliest youth in terms of his determinations and guidelines, and indeed on an ongoing basis at every place where he always stayed. Thus, he was also under constant control. At the same time, he learned a lot and everything started off well until he went to Vienna to enjoy an artistic education, at which he then failed, however. And from that point on, he rapidly fell more and more toward the negative and evil. Consequently, he fell outside of our control, and our telepathic impulses attempts remain fruitless. So, I mean, the Playaron were trying to impulse this guy and influence him to be a world leader. He had great potential for good, evidently.
Well, that was when they impulse people, the people don't know that the impulses are happening, you know, right. And so they maybe he was also. I've wondered about this, like whether he had also impulses from his own storage banks. I mean, can you get bad impulses from your storage banks?
Absolutely.
I think you can, and then
you can. Absolutely.
So I mean, he could have been getting some bad impulses from his storage banks, but I think suggestions from people in everyday real interactions, like that, seem more concrete to the average person. They might override impulses, and that you might get through your consciousness. I mean, I don't know if Hitler was any kind of a meditator or anything like that, but I don't know.
Are you hearing any movement? I've been hearing like a scratching kind of thing.
No.
Is it your microphone or something?
It's probably my microphone rubbing up against my sweatshirt. I'll pull it away from there. Okay. So maybe that's probably it.
That's probably what it was, yeah.
But
actually, it's better already. Thank you.
Yeah, I just took it away. Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that, wondering if that was doing anything.
You know, it's anyway, for whatever reason, I don't know why, I've been thinking a lot about World War II, been watching a lot of World War II movies. Billy says we're headed for a civil war. I hope we're going to get through this and it's not going to happen. But just some interesting thoughts.
Yeah.
And history has so much information in it. Especially the history in the Meyer case.
Yeah, there's an entire world of information. It's like an entire world view, you know?
Absolutely. A whole frame of reference. So you want to start on page 246 in the Way to Live?
Yeah.
If you have it handy, you can read it.
I've got it right here, yeah. I mean, it says... it's number 356. It says, it can never be stressed enough that the truth of the creational laws and recommendations, as well as the recognition and fulfillment of them to the best of one's ability and capacity, is of the greatest importance in order to have an honest and fair mode of life and leading of life in the context of the evolution driven by strivingness. From that, it also follows that the learning and following of the teaching of the truth is of immense significance, and that the teaching of the truth and the recognizing and fulfilling of the creational laws and recommendations is, in every case and without doubt, always above the personality of a teacher of the truth. Therefore, in four truths, it is said, 1. Rely on the truth of the creational laws and recommendations and not on the personality of a human being. Consequently, a human being ought not to ever rely on the personality of a teacher, rather solely on the teacher's message, and indeed only when it corresponds to the truth in truly form.
Can you elaborate on that? What does it mean to rely on the personality of a teacher?
So it means it's I think to me it kind of means like not turning the teacher into a cult figure, and not turning to the making the person out any more than he or she really is. It's like, I really liked Miss Szymanski as a math teacher when I was in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. She was a great teacher. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed being in her class. I liked being around her, but she wasn't the reason why I took that class. It was so I could learn math. Mm-hmm. And the math is what stuck with me. And so occasionally I might remember her as a nice teacher, but what's helped me more was the fact that I learned the math in her class that has helped me throughout my whole life.
You know, Svath told Billy that the people of the earth make idols for themselves. That's one of the things I remember that he said.
They do, that we do. I mean, people do that all the time. It's all over the place. It's in, you know, they make, people make idols out of religious figures. People make idols out of Billy, even.
Yeah.
People make idols out of celebrities all the time, of course, especially celebrities.
And you know what I think's bad about that? Is when they see that the person is really just a person and has some flaws, they attack the idol, the former idol, sometimes. Have you ever seen people do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, of course. It's a strange thing.
Well, those people, a lot of them also crave attention, and they, a lot of people become famous because they wanted to become famous and they wanted to be somebody that other people, it's like the ego thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
With Billy, he has like no ego. It's pretty cool to be around him because he's just so normal.
Mm-hmm.
I've met him a few times, and you know, it's like the stuff that I've, and this applies to this too, because the stuff that I've learned from him is like, it's like so important, and it's helped me so much in my life ever since I found it and have started applying it, and it's super cool to meet him, but he, you know, he himself is not the reason why I'm trying to implement creational laws and recommendations into my life, and you know, he's not the reason why I'm trying to see reality for what it is, and trying to, you know, get rid of belief-oriented thinking and be a better person, trying to be more loving, trying to, you know, have more empathy. You know, it's not because of him really. It's just, I mean, he wrote it, a lot of the stuff that I implemented into my life, but it's not for him. It's for myself, you know?
In Contact 228, it says something very interesting. It says, now, if Noqodamian spirit form has a very high stage of evolution, then that doesn't mean that the human in which this spirit form is reincarnated would therefore be something other than a simple human. Now, I don't think of Billy as a simple human, but
well,
he kind of is. I think
it's like relatively speaking, you know, because he's sure. Like if his spirit form is like 9.6 billion years old,
right?
His consciousness level is definitely not going to be that at that level, but at the same time, according to the information, he does have a very high level of consciousness, where he's like actually in his short lifetime, he's, I think, surpassed even Ptah.
I know,
in
that's his, amazing.
In his consciousness evolution, but it's like it's not as high as 9.6 billion years old. You know, there's.
But you know, sometimes I see that simple guy from Switzerland just kind of come through sometimes. You know what I mean? Like he'll say these super profound things that just stun you, that you'll think about for a couple years. And then he says, you know, he kind of does something or says something that seems so down to earth and so plain. And you're kind of sitting there going, wow, that, what an interesting contrast. And the same guy. You know what I mean? It's
it's
very, very, very different.
But so I mean, yeah, he'll say like very profound things, and he writes very profound things. But he's definitely a normal guy. I mean, I was sitting in the kitchen with him; it was just me and him. We were waiting for somebody, and he's picking his hangnail on his thumb.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. That's and exactly I was like, what I look, mean.
I was like looking over there, and I'm like.
What?
Don't do that.
What the hell are you doing, man?
Like, don't do that. You're going to make it worse, you know? And, like, of course, like, you know, he's like, he, like, flaps his hand a little bit, and he's like, ah. And then, like, Ava comes in, and then she's like, you know, has the fingernail clippers to try to clip it off. And then she's like, Rem, will you do this? And I was like, she's like, I don't like blood. And
I
was like, sure, I don't care. I'll do it. And Billy is just like, and then like,
seriously,
just kind of like ran, like walked away into the back room.
No,
he's like, maybe like embarrassed or something. That's, I don't know. But
funny, man.
I mean, this is the same guy, you know, who's writing this stuff. It's like, he's just a normal guy.
I know, how the heck is the same guy there? But it's true. That is funny, man. See, how many times have you got to meet with him like that? That's really amazing.
I like kind of 4 times, but really like only 2 times. It was like the beginning of a trip in 2012. I spent a while there, like 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then I took a few weeks in touring around Europe and then went back to the center for a few days before I headed back to the States. And then, actually three times, because there was that time which was like twice in one trip to Europe. But then I went really quickly after my father passed away in 2017. I was already going to Europe with my girlfriend and her daughter, and I just decided that I'm gonna fly to Zurich and go to the center for a few days, and you know, and then that was pretty short. But then last summer I went with like a number of people who are involved in FIGU. They're all in their like late 20s to early 30s, and so it was like me, Daniel Cooper, Tim James, Derek, or Sheeler and Sanyan. Sanyan, Derek, he's Sanyan, and Tim live in Ohio.
Maybe, well,
you could probably have a good chance of seeing those guys if you ever wanted to
I'd
make
like that
connection.
Yeah, I'll have to get more information.
Yeah, I think they live in the Cleveland area, but
that's a couple hours.
Yeah,
I could do it.
And then, so, but that was, you know, a few days at least, because we spent a few days at the center last summer, and then we took a little trip and went camping and stuff, and then went back to the center afterwards.
Does he like go into like his room and just kind of stay in there when people are all over the place like that?
Billy?
Yeah, nobody knows what he does, I guess, or where he goes, or does he leave the center completely, or do you have
He doesn't really leave the center that much. I think he gets in the pass. He'll go like once a day, once every few days, like get in the passenger seat of the car and drive with you know, Christian Franer or like Jacobus or whoever, Ava, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know exactly what he does all the time, because you know, him and Ava have a daughter together.
Oh,
who has a Selena. Selena has a pretty severe mental handicap.
Oh, is that right?
And physical handicap. Yeah. So Selena has, you know, that's got to be quite a bit of work to take care of her. And I don't know where she goes. You know, she probably has different people that take care of her. And but then Billy's always, he's always writing. He's always thinking. When I was there, his shoulder was broken, so he couldn't really write.
How did that happen?
He was he was driving in a car down the road to go to the store or something, and he noticed this farmer who's a neighbor of his who was walking like a few cows. I want to say they were like little cows that were that was on the side of the road, and Billy wanted to talk to him for a moment, and so he got out of the car and was talking to the guy, and then something startled these cows, and they were like next to each other, held together by like a harness.
Oh. Oh, wow.
And they ran, and they like ran right towards him. And I think the harness that was in between the two cows, like they went on either side of him, and he got like wow. flipped down onto the ground and like shattered his shoulder.
Oh no. I never Excuse heard me. That story. I never knew anything about that.
Yeah, he's like, it's an experience. You know? So, like, he said he'll never be able to lift his arm up above a certain height ever again.
No,
you know,
kidding.
Like after you know, like it's his only arm.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what where I mean.
He
yeah.
does all of his writing. But he can write now again.
He can
I
still
think,
write, right? Yeah.
Okay. But for a few weeks there, he wasn't able to write. So he was just kind of hanging out and, you know, just kind of giving advice on what to do with how to clip these bushes over. He's like a master gardener, so he'll seriously.
Right?
I mean, he's like knows so much about plants and like how to prune things and like where things go to plant them. And the center itself is like a botanical garden. It's so beautiful.
I bet.
And
I've seen some of Daniel Cooper's video of that area.
Oh yeah,
it's so beautiful. God.
Yeah, but I mean, I got to talk to him for like an hour at one point because he just had just so much downtime. It was awesome, you know. I think that was probably kind of a rare opportunity because like he most of the time he's you know ruminating over something that's going on in his mind and what he wants to write and like working things out. And I mean, I think he, you know, gets up around 10 a.m. and just kind of does things around the center, maybe writes here and there. And then, like, I think he's a little bit of a night owl, too. So I think he'll go to bed at, like, midnight or later.
Huh.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert. I haven't really been there.
You've only been there like four times.
Too much.
That's really great. I mean, it sounds like it was fruitful. Most of all your trips have been fruitful. You know, is that safe to say? Or
yeah, I mean, I would rather go there than pretty much anywhere else in the world because I just learn so much every time I go there. Even in small passing comments from people, it's like stuff that I can think about for forever. It's amazing.
Was it you that told me, maybe it was in the last show we did, I think it might have been you, that well, they've got Christian, right? And he's kind of in charge, but there's another guy that's in charge as well. help me out here.
Jacobus?
No, it isn't Jacobus, I don't think. Maybe it wasn't you that told me this, but I remember. I thought it was you. Yeah, yeah.
There was Silvano, but he died a few years ago, which is, you know, too bad because he did a lot there.
Isn't there a young guy? That's head of Figu right now. It's not.
Well, there's Andreas. Andreas Schubiger. He's like the president, but they're all. They're all clearly equal over there. They're all like total equals. It's
okay.
There's no hierarchy at all. They just treat each other so like frankly and normal. Mm-hmm. And they have their differences. Some of
Who
them
is
like
the guy. Maybe it wasn't you. I thought it was you. That said he just focuses on the might of thoughts because he only feels like he could in one lifetime actually really learn one book that Billy's written. Was that you?
I did say something like that. There was Patrick Chanot over there.
Yeah, maybe.
He's also a core group member, but I think I asked him when I was there like 6.5 years ago if he'd read all of Billy's books, and he's said no. I don't think he necessarily said Might of the Thoughts, okay. but he said he would rather take one and just learn the material really well. And Billy's stepson, or foster son, or there's Atlanta Bieri. I guess that would be sort of his stepson, because Billy and his Atlant's mom Ava are like in a partnership. But Billy kind of raised Atlant, and Atlant wrote a really great piece about studying Billy's writings, and it kind of, the gist of it is yeah, that you should study the things really slowly, and it's also recommendable to have a dictionary on hand so that you can look up words and see the various meanings of the words, and of course to know the or at least learn the German or see what it means into German if you don't know German.
Well, I know we're about out of time, but in this in this one passage it said, do not rely simply on the words of a teacher, which are only supported by his or her personality. Rather, rely on the truthly sense of his or her words. And the German word, I think it's pronounced as if it starts with a Z. Sinn means sense, mind, meaning, significance, spirit.
Yeah.
And that phrase, truthly sense, I'd never heard before. And I believe, is it Wahrheit?
That's Wahrheit, yeah, the truth.
Truth. Genuine truth. Trueness.
Yeah, that's like a goblet of the truth is Kelch der Wahrheit.
Ah.
So truth, Wahrheit is like one of those words that I really know in German. I'm not a German speaker yet, that's like one of those. Wahrheit. Anyway.
I'll have to hold on to that word. Truth.
I would like to continue this conversation more with the, that was, page 246, number 356.
Okay.
And then page 354, number 421. And they both kind of, I mean, we can't really go over the hour, right?
Right now we're just free form recording, and I'll post it to Blog Talk. We can, but
we like to keep it at an hour. But
just because,
I mean, we've gone over like really far over before. Maybe we could go like just a few minutes over, not like a really long time over. Yeah. But let's just plow through this information because it's so good. Mm-hmm. You just read number two, and then number three is never rely on a provisional form of a teacher's explanation or meaning of a word or interpretation. Rather, heed and evaluate only the ultimate value of an expression, of an influence, of content, and of a term or of a meaning and explanation.
Mm-hmm. One thing I did look up was the word provisional,
mm-hmm.
which means arranged or existing for the present, possibly to be changed later.
Yeah.
So that shed a little light on it.
Yeah, that makes me think, like, you know, don't take everything I say on the fly as gospel truth.
Exactly.
You know, like, mm-hmm. I might just say something offhand and don't hold on to it forever. You know?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Rather, heed and evaluate only the ultimate value of an expression of an influence. Okay. Number four, never rely on your usual everyday consciousness, which as a rule only occupies itself with superficial things and is extremely connected to the personality. Rather, rely solely on the knowledge consciousness and wisdom consciousness, which correctly assesses in truthly form.
I've never heard him use those words like that, knowledge consciousness and wisdom consciousness.
Neither have I.
Okay. That would be something to look into then there.
Yeah.
One of the things when I was reading this that stuck out, you know, where he says don't get caught up on the personality of the teacher. And then I looked up at Figu Bulletin 38. About the personality. Let me read just a little bit of that because I know it's getting late. It says, the radiating impression of the personality is the radiation factor which is also designated the aura, and it is this which can be observed by means of the sense of perception by other humans when they are sensitive enough, respectively, when they can consciously use the energies and powers of their pineal gland and thereby consciously utilize these perceptions. The fact is that every human is surrounded by fine matter. A fine matter, respectively, a fluidal electromagnetic field which contains the information of the personality. Therefore, the imprint, respectively, the radiation of the personality, is also called the information field, none of which, however, has anything to do with esoteric nonsense, just as it has nothing to do with the alleged and deceitful mediums who falsely boast out of image-seeing and profit greed and about their ability to see our auras. And this fluido electromagnetic field also has an effect on the fellow human, and with sufficient sensitivity it can be perceived and defined by him. So I guess there's a whole lot going on there with the personality, but and we're not supposed to get distracted by it, and I can see why we could.
Well, that what you read right there is it goes, it just goes right with the last part of this this thing after those four truths or those four points or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says like a truly wise teacher of the truthly truth certainly has an emanation which corresponds to his or her strong personality, but which is always below the value of the teaching of the truth as well as the recognizing, understanding, following, and fulfilling of it.
Tell us the page of that again.
That's 248.
248, okay.
However, this is about almost halfway down. It says, however, for the students, the radiance or emanation of the teacher's personality is nevertheless also important in the form that one gets to know the nature and structure of one's own personality, whereby one can find one's way back to one's real and true original nature and identity.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Thereby the personality of the person who teaches, whether female or male, is always below the teaching of the truth. Consequently, he or she cannot be put in direct relationship with the teaching itself. And since that is the case, the teaching of the truth always comes to the fore and always ranks first as the most important factor. So
I'm going to highlight that. That's really awesome. That whole radiance thing, that the fine fluidal energies. Sometimes I think we pick up on that a lot more than we realize. Speculation.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I probably feel like I do anyway. At least.
Yeah.
Listen to Billy speak. You know what's interesting? Remember that 2011 interview he did with Christian, where they did the English subtitles?
Yeah, I could never forget that. I transcribed it into text.
Oh, you did? Wow, that's awesome.
Well, I was going through the video and I remember I was on the bus. I was going through the video step by step and just typing out the words that were on the video and then put it into a text format, and that's where that is. But anyway, what were we going to say about that?
Well, there are I don't know how much of this will actually go through an electronic device, but I mean, I could not understand the German, yet it felt like his mannerisms and his facial expression also was part of the communication, if that makes any sense.
And then yeah,
there was a power
of course
to that. There was a power, a real power to that video. And some of the questions I really liked, and some of them I thought were like real simplistic, but his his answers were so profound that even if the question was kind of basic, it was like, whoa, he got this dump of information anyway.
Well, you were talking about his expressions and his like moving his hands, right, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And on page 354 in this The Way to Live book, I was like going to go to 421, but on number 420, the one before it, it says the spontaneous freedom of the correct, logical, understandable, and appropriate expression through speech and gesticulation, which is what you're talking about with him being very animated and he's talking, very often requires years of grueling learning, because this ability does not fall into the human being's lap. Rather, it must be learnt through hard work and arduousness.
Is that 421 you were saying?
That was 420.
420, okay.
Yeah.
Now, this book, that if people are going to listen to this later, we have page numbers, but we also have these numbers, and there's a whole series of points. I don't know how many there are. There must be about 500 or something
like
that.
Well, let's go to the end. Yeah, there's 500. Yep.
Do you know any of the story behind that? Why did he organize the book like this? I have no idea.
I don't know.
It's just kind of the way it worked out. Very interesting. Yeah.
And some of them are really short, like one sentence, and some of them are like 50 pages long. Like that one on striving is like 50 pages.
That's that one that starts around page 100 or something? Because I always go to page 102 is the one I always use in the show. But that, for some reason, you know, where he explains that striving is related directly to your happiness.
Yeah, so it's number 151, but it starts on page 98.
Okay.
And it goes to, like, I mean, I don't even know how far it goes. It goes really far. It's like like 140, 148, I think. Yeah. But oh, by the way, you always mention Might of the Thoughts on this show.
Uh-huh.
And I think, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
I think you should, when you say the page number, I think you should make it clear to people that it is in the second edition.
Okay, yes.
Because in the first edition, the page numbers are all different because the Figo Australia only had a certain amount of money to work with to go to press.
Oh, really?
And then so that they had to format it in such a way that it was, the way that it turned out was kind of tight. And so then when they got a big donation, I think, and then they ran a second edition of it, which is what you have. Mm-hmm. I have the first edition, but okay. With the second edition, they had a little bit more money to work with, so they changed the spacing so that the book would open a little bit easier, and it wasn't so so like taxing or something to like read it and to like, because with the first edition you really had to like kind of force it open so you could see the inside of the page, I think it's more like a normal book with the second one. It's like more natural. Anyway.
That's a very good point, and I've been burned by that a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's like 22 pages difference or something like that. I don't know what it is.
It probably gets more different as you get towards the back of the book, right?
That's very, very possible. So, and you guys are always in The Way to Live. I mean, you've been in there for like a couple years.
I think it's been, it must have, I don't know when we started, but I think we've probably been studying it for like 2 years.
Now, do you guys all come to the study with whatever you want to talk about and then you just kind of go from there? Or is it more organized? Is it more formal? How does it work?
Yeah, there's a little bit of organization to it. We have a business meeting of the, you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. There was just a little scratch or something. We have like a business meeting at the beginning with like the passive members It's just me, Carol, and Bill, and then we just, you know, discuss things that we have to discuss if we're having any like info stands coming up, or if, you know, like we want to do anything that, I don't know, it's just whatever that would be in, as far as just purely internal group concerns. And then that usually lasts about a half an hour, and then our group meeting starts, and that goes until, I don't know, it goes from like noon until 2:30, 4, I don't know, wow. 3, you know, so a few hours. Sometimes we'll jump right into a way to live. A lot of times we'll spend a little while like kind of just talking about stuff that we've been dealing with, and because that's also real life stuff that you can apply the spiritual teaching to, which is, you know, and there's not really too many opportunities to talk to other people other than at our group, you know,
right.
To talk to other people about our everyday stuff and then apply the spiritual teaching to it and bounce ideas off of each other. So it's like right. a really great outlet for, you know, because that's just not possible with like most people that you are that I know, you know.
Oh, sure. Most people are not ready for this kind of stuff.
And you can talk about the topics with people like without really saying. You can talk about what you've learned and like just the information that you've learned, and you might not say like where you learned it or something, but I mean, talking about like having empathy and talking about creating harmony in your environment is pretty universal. You don't have to like be knowledgeable about Billy's writings or be involved in FIGU to be able to relate to that.
Do you feel like you've grown in terms of your empathy?
Sorry, you cut out. What did you say?
Do you feel like you have more empathy now than you used to?
I do. But I don't think that I've learned empathy as much from Billy's material as I have from Marshall Rosenberg. Have you ever heard of Marshall Rosenberg?
No.
He developed a technique called nonviolent communication.
Really?
And I feel like it goes really closely with the spiritual teaching.
Okay. Wow.
And I think police officers use that something similar when they, you know, when they have to deal with somebody who's being totally unruly, and they have to like keep their calm, you know, not talking. We have so much police brutality in our culture now, and in the news, that it's hard to say police officer with and not think about it in that light. But mm-hmm. I'm talking about, like, you know, the respectable police officers who will keep their cool in situations that are very tense and violent.
Right.
And I think they're all trained in a similar thing. Nonviolent communication. Marshall Rosenberg's method is just one way of doing it. But I think if you were to, I was wondering if it would, I forgot to ask Billy if he'd ever heard of Marshall Rosenberg, but I think that it, like, if you were to translate it into German, it would probably be like violent in German is usually translated as Gewalt.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be like nicht Gewalt. And then I don't know what the word for communication is. It might be even like Kommunikation, but I don't think that's what it is. It's probably something else. But
have you ever heard of the word Gewaltsamkeit?
Yeah, I think you would say like Gewaltsamkeit.
Gewaltsamkeit. What does that mean?
Gewaltsamkeit. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's in the back of I can't say offhand because I don't know it. I don't have that one memorized.
Okay.
But
okay.
No, it's not in the back of the Way to Live, but maybe it's in the back of Talmud Emmanuel. Some of these books have like got glossaries of mm-hmm. you know important words that you should know. No, it doesn't.
You know, and a lot of times the Meyer definition is not the standard German definition. At least that's what I seem to come across sometimes.
No, I know he really hashes out explanations for a lot of things. Like, I mean, he's even invented words too.
Oh, a lot.
Billy has.
Yeah.
Like impulsation.
So he invents a word in German, and then they have to invent a word in English to translate it to.
I don't know if they invent a word. If they here's the Gewaltsamkeit. I don't know if they invent a word in English either,
mm-hmm.
but Gewaltsamkeit is a noun, and it says the state or quality of being with Gewalt.
With Gewalt.
And then another
with violence.
Yeah. Okay. Another bullet point is a deed or behavior that is gewaltsam. So gewaltsam is with Gewalt. It's an adjective.
You know what I'm noticing more about German is very logical. Like you can kind of build words, right? By putting different things together.
And you can do that in English to some extent, but not as well as in German.
Yeah.
You know? But since we're talking about Gewalt, might as well list off what that definition is since we're here. Mm-hmm. Gewalt is the brutal execution of elemental might and force, but it is far above all might and all force. Gewalt exists in different and relative forms, one example being gewaltige Gesinnung, which is an expression from the character, personality, thoughts, feelings, and emotions that shows the inclination to act with Gewalt. And an explanation from Bata. Gewalt has nothing to do with the terms heftig, which is violent, and heftigkeit, violence, because the old Lyrianian term with regard to Gewalt means Gewila. And it is defined as using with all the coercive means that are at one's disposal, physical, psychical, mental, and consciousness-based powers, abilities, and skills, in order to carry out and carry through terrible actions and deeds. So now, maybe that'd be like the SS, you know?
That would be... So these were the Illyrians, right? I mean, this word came from a Illyrian word? Is that true?
It says because the old Lyrian term with regard to Gewalt means Gewila. I don't know if Gewalt came from Lyrian, but maybe there's some similarities. I know that German and Lyrian language are very similar. Like they have the same amount of characters, and German is the like Lyrian apparently was spoken on Earth like something like 389,000 years ago, and it was I think German was just kind of a mutation of the old Lyrian language.
I have this feeling something. That those guys had a real dark side too.
I know. They probably did, you know.
I get a feeling of them too much. I just have this feeling.
That's like, you know, the United States, like Americans, we have dark sides, but there's also like really great people here too in this country.
That's true. That's very, very true.
You know, I was thinking also earlier when we were talking about the extraterrestrials at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
That it's almost like you can't really think about them as extraterrestrials. You just think of them as foreigners. They just happen to be from another world,
right?
But it's extraterrestrial sounds like really, I don't know. There's like a lot of subconscious kind of associations that come along with that term. And it's like, maybe just because it's more almost, it seems almost, I mean, yeah, extraterrestrial is like the practical definition of what they are, because they are non-terrestrial people. But like, really, they're also foreigners, you know, and when we think of a foreigner, all of a sudden it could be just a person from Europe or like somebody from Australia or something, you know?
Sure.
So.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Man, we've been going for quite some time here. we got to try to, let's try to do this once a month or something.
I'd love to do that. I mean, it's seeming to me like it would be practical for me to be able to do it midweek like this, because I feel like I'm so busy all the time on the weekends. Like, I mean, my my schedule has just gone crazy. Kind of. In some ways it has, but in some ways it's been a lot more relaxed. But because I was doing murals with some guys, and I'm not really doing murals with the same group of guys anymore, and I've been more concentrating on my own art. I'm an artist. I don't know if you know that, but
Of course.
As that's my like profession, how I make the bread and butter.
That's awesome, man. That's
and
really
yeah. So in the past, like a few months, I've just been like just painting like crazy, just
like
trying to
doing a lot of murals.
No, painting like these. I do these. I do these small paintings in Altoid tins. Go to my website. It's just RemingtonRobinson.com.
Okay.
And you see what I'm talking about. Like I try to do one a day. I don't always do that, but sometimes I do two a day. But it's just in the last few months I've gotten a lot of traction on social media, like on Instagram. I've gotten a lot of big accounts reposting my artwork, and my follower count has just gone up and up and up, and I've been getting more business, and so I've just been busy.
You sell them online?
I do.
Now, do you do these like little, I see these little silver, they look like a little box.
Yeah, like, you know, the Altoids mints.
Oh, like, I'm not even familiar with that. No,
you've been like to the grocery store, like in, excuse me, like in the checkout line, or like at a gas station, you can buy like Altoids peppermint mints.
Donna's probably aware of all this stuff. I'm not aware of all this stuff.
Is that your wife?
Yeah.
Yes. Is she, I don't know. It's just a little like aluminum tin.
So this
that is
a good idea.
And then I wish I could take credit for the idea. I mean, I saw somebody else doing it, so I just started doing it too. I actually did consider it as an idea, just like as maybe like 10 years ago or something, but I didn't think it was practical. Like, you know how you're talking about like ideas versus ideals?
Oh yeah.
Well, this was just an idea that I had had, and I had never like made it into an ideal. I didn't take it very far enough to like think about all the ins and outs of it, and I just kind of, it was an idea, and then I just kind of thought it was maybe not a great idea. So, but then I saw somebody else doing it, and I was like, oh, that is kind of a good idea. So, and then it's this girl who lives in Denver. I actually met up with her and painted with her once. And her name is Heidi Annalise. She's got a huge social media following with her paintings that are similar. And I met up with her, painted with her, and I asked her if I could start doing this. I was like, "Do you mind if I start doing the same thing? That looks pretty fun." She's like, "Oh, go ahead." I didn't come up with the idea, so don't know where it came from, but it's just. That's just like a lot of things. Like, you know, a lot of, you see somebody else doing it and you do it too, and then
that's
somebody else does it.
That's really great. I'm looking at your paintings. They're like miniatures.
Yeah, they're all miniatures. Each thing is on a little panel of wood, like a little piece of birch plywood, and it's 2 inches by 3 inches that
that's
I Velcro into the.
That's got to be hard to paint. I'm that little area. My goodness.
It's not so bad because I have small brushes and I can brace my hand up against the side of the container to get it steady.
Huh.
To get the brush steady, and then the palette of paint is just right down in there in the bottom of the tin, and I sell them just as is. Like I fix a little wood block to the back of it so that the lid is propped open for display at the right angle, like you see them in there in the picture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I do those two different sizes. I do the Altoid normal boxes, and then I do the Altoid smalls boxes, which have a really small panel in there, which is like an inch and a half by an inch or something.
I see one here where you just have like a dish and then a glass, and it looks like tea or something in the glass.
Yeah, that one actually. I wrote a paper about the meaning of life, and then I made it into little booklets that we give away at our info stand. And that was one of those booklets about the meaning of life, right there that I painted into the scene with the teapot.
Huh. When do you guys do your info stands?
It's not as regular anymore because we used to do that. We did them for 2015, 16, 17. We did them for at least 3 years here in Boulder on the Pearl Street Mall, like once a month, just during the warmer months of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, May through September or October.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you know, it's like that wasn't very productive. We got one member who found us through that.
Okay.
He looked us up on our website and he found our stand. And so he was coming to our group meetings for a while, and then he moved to Ohio actually.
Really?
Yeah.
How ironic. Did you lose touch with him?
I don't really talk to him, but I think Carol still talks to him occasionally. But yeah, and then other than that, like we'd have some interesting conversations here and there, but mostly it was like a lot of work for not much return. Mm-hmm. Like, because I think people are kind of on this outdoor mall here just to kind of like be entertained and like go to shops and see pretty things. Like we had these paperweights that were like that Carol has that are like the shape of like one of them that looks like a big jewel. It's just like, but it's just a piece of glass.
Uh-huh.
And people just like come up to the stand and look at, ooh, pretty, and then they just like, and then just keep going, you know. So it was just kind of a lot of work to do that and not much return. But we do info stands. We still do them every once in a while if there is like a psychic fair or like a new age festival or something. Sometimes we can get, I think there might be one coming up, but I'm not sure when it is. I think we'll probably talk about it at the next meeting. Actually, I can't be at the next meeting because I'm going to be in Mexico.
I'm looking at your tremendous painting, this gigantic mural of a trout.
Oh yeah,
that's impressive.
Thanks.
That's very impressive.
That's here in Boulder. If you're ever in Boulder, you can see it in person.
Wow. That is quite stunning.
Thanks, man.
So, do you do them that big often? Or, I mean, that's huge.
I've done probably worked on 50 murals, at least
50
in the Denver area. But that is kind of like one of the only ones that's like 100% mine. The one with the trout.
Uh huh. Now, what do you mean? It's the other ones aren't yours, or?
Well, the other ones, you know, I worked on it with other people, and
oh,
like
it was a group.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, yeah. I'd like to see the finished product. This looks like it's about halfway done. On your website, right?
Yeah, that's on the about page, I think.
Yeah.
I still haven't uploaded a page featuring murals only. I need to do that.
Oh, you should. These buildings are impressive as hell. Gosh.
Yeah, I gotta get in there.
That's the biggest trout I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That could eat a person.
It's like, seriously. It's like 15 feet. I think the wall is maybe 15 by 20 feet. I want to say.
That's very, very cool.
I wanted to ask you one more thing. Is your wife, she doesn't study this material, does she?
She is very, very normal. She's very down to earth. You're right. So I'll throw a little thing out here and there, but I don't push it on her at all. So
that's good. Yeah. Does she know that you're doing this show?
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But she's kind of just non interfering.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
That's good.
Yeah. So anyway, man, I better go. It's quite late. I've had a great time, and we've covered a lot of very interesting material. Maybe, let me see, it's March. Maybe we could do another one in April?
Yeah, I'd like to do that. Okay. If we can.
We'll do. All right, I'm going to hang up, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks a lot, Ram.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Sounds good.